I'm Casey Tanner.
And I'm Camille Lewis. And this is Safe Word.
Safe Word is sex therapy unhinged because instead of being a blank slate that's just here to support you, we're telling you all the details on our own sex lives, relationships, identities, and more.
This isn't sex and it's not therapy, but we are sex therapists and what you hear today may excite you. Each week, we tackle a theme related to sex, relationships, gender, and more.
This week, we're diving into gender with our guest, Evian Whitney. This week, we've got a surprise in store, our amazing guest, Evian. Evian Whitney is a sexuality doula, sex educator, and sensualist. Since 2011, their work has focused on decolonizing, unshaming, and liberating sexuality at the intersection of identity, trauma healing, pleasure, and embodiment. Evian is the author of Sensual Self, Prompts and Practices for Getting in Touch with Your Body, a self-guided journal that will help you prioritize your pleasure and come home to yourself through your senses. They also host a beloved podcast by the same name. For more about Evian's work, go to evianwhitney.com or follow them on Instagram at evian.whitney. So Evian, we are so thrilled to have you here. Maybe a little bit anxious or some nervous energy in our virtual studio today, being like, Evian's here. We cannot believe it. You've been an inspiration to me for a very long time before I ever started my Instagram account. And so just really, it's surreal to have you.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm like so happy to be here and really excited that you all asked me to join you in this conversation. I'm excited.
Yay, good. We're thrilled. And I love your really like somatic body oriented approach to pleasure. It's very much where I operate from in my work as a therapist. So it's great to just see alignment there and the way that you express yourself. So really, really thrilled to have you here.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm like really into the body. Like I'm really fascinated by it, and especially like marrying this study of the body or this fascination and deep reverence for the body with sexuality and gender expression. It's just, to me, it's just a juicy combo. So I feel really happy to be here to talk to you all about all of that.
Well, to start out, we wanted to do just a couple of icebreakers with you. Is that okay?
Totally. Hit me.
Well, first,
in a consensual way, of course.
Always. In a consensual way. So as you know, our show is called Safe Word. And so we like to ask our guests what your safe word is, if you have one.
I'm laughing because you all gave me a little bit of a preview of what this conversation was going to be. And, you told me that you would be asking me what my safe word is. And I was like, oh my God, do I have a safe word? So I asked my partner, what is our safe word? Do we have a safe word? And he was like, oh my God, you don't remember? Like, we've been talking about this. You don't remember? And I was like, no. Like, I don't remember the safe word. Oh no. And then he just like said some gobbledygook about like banana mash sandwiches or something like that. And I was like, oh, you're pulling my leg.
Messing with you.
Yeah. He was totally messing with me. So I tell that story to say, I actually don't have a safe word. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what that says about me as a sexuality educator and doula, but I don't have one.
I wonder if maybe part of it is with you and your partner or partners that you have other ways of signaling to each other when something isn't safe, that isn't necessarily a code word.
I think so. I mean, I feel really lucky that I have been in partnership with my partner for 16 years and we just know each other. We get each other.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of nonverbal cues that he picks up on, and also same with him. So yeah, I think not having a safe word is a testament to just me feeling really safe in my sexual relationships, which is great.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That's good news.
It's beautiful.
That's wonderful news. Yeah, I think that like a safe word can just be like a signal or attunement, which is what mm-hmm. you're speaking about, of a shared language that is communicated through the body. And
mm-hmm. yeah,
that's really lovely.
Yeah. Yeah. That's actually making me think about like what happens in my body, like what my partner might pick up on that might be that safe word mm-hmm. or like safe verbal cue. Mm-hmm. And he knows me so well that there are some times where I'm in this space of feeling like disconnected from my body, or I might sure. get triggered during the act of sex. And I don't exactly know what he sees, but I have a sense of what happens in my body, which is like, mm-hmm. I start to leave my body a little mm-hmm. bit, and I start to feel disconnected from the experience. Like maybe I'm not fully present to him or whatever we're doing. And I think that that shows or tracks because he's able to be like, whoa, let's pause. Are you okay? Mm-hmm. Are you still here in the room? Which I really appreciate that he is able to attune himself to me in that way. Because oftentimes I'm just like, I guess I did sort of leave my body in that moment. Or I guess I do need to take a pause and mm-hmm. take a moment to recalibrate this experience and figure out if it works for me. So yeah, it's I love that invitation to think about like the safe words that come from the body mm-hmm. and not so much from our voices or our words.
Mm-hmm. Incredible. Maybe we need to start changing this prompt.
I know.
Safe maybe. Words. Safe motion.
Signal.
Safe signal. Love that. Okay, yeah. We've got one more icebreaker. So with a gender theme in mind, I wanted each of us to answer this question. If mm-hmm. your gender was a metaphor, if you have a metaphor for your gender, what would it be? Either of you could mm-hmm. start.
I have something top of mind, but Camille, mm-hmm. if you want to go, it's all you.
Please take it away.
Okay. So I was doing some vision boarding this morning, and there was a clipping that got cut out that said eternal yet ephemeral. And I feel like that is the essence of my gender, eternal yet ephemeral.
Mm. That is so beautiful. I'm going to cry.
It didn't come from me. It came from the clippings, the collaging gods. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
I love that came today, too, just in time. Just in time for you to answer this question.
Yeah. Really, really beautiful. But Camille, Casey, I'd love to hear what yours are.
I don't know if I can follow.
There's no competition.
Next. I mean, okay. So I was thinking about this. My first reaction was dog dad, because when I think of like a dog dad, there's this very particular image that comes to mind, and something about the energy of that I feel like really captures my gender. But then I was thinking about a disco ball, or just like disco in general, just the vibe of disco, which is genderless in this way, but also there are pieces of masculinity, pieces of femininity, a little bit of dancing. That's where I landed. Disco.
I love that.
I like that too.
Thank you.
I think a few things are coming up for me. Like one is like a vase, or like a shapely vase. Like I'm very into like curvy,
curvature?
Flowy. Yeah. Like flowy vases. So I feel like maybe that's what's capturing it today, or just like in this moment, as I'm thinking about the metaphor, that'll probably change though.
Let us know. It's beautiful. It's such a good point that, you know, what captures our attention around gender today is going to be different than maybe tomorrow or even in an hour. So let us know if it evolves through this episode as we answer these amazing questions.
Oh, okay.
All right. Speaking of questions, should we dive in?
Yeah, let's dive in.
So our first question asks, can you have feelings of dysphoria without being trans? This person says, I'm a cis woman and I feel deeply uncomfortable when I feel too masked.
I would say yes. I would say I think so. I think that gender dysphoria isn't solely an experience that trans and gender nonconforming folks feel. Mm-hmm. And I actually like the idea that cis folks would be tapping into gender dysphoria. as like, maybe that will help humanize the gender dysphoria that trans folks feel and, you know, gender non-conforming people feel of like, yeah, this is a universal experience, may not be felt in the same or similar ways, but that it is possible for us to feel a sense of enthusiastic yes and also an enthusiastic no when it comes to our particular gender expression. So I would say yes, but I'm curious about what y'all think.
I similarly am leaning towards yes, definitely, as dysphoria being kind of like a universal potentially experience. And it also seems like presentation, gender presentation is a question here. I think, yeah, and I like the idea of it being more humanizing so that it doesn't have to feel like something that's siloed to a specific group or that you have to have permission to enter dysphoria, that it can happen sometimes.
I'm with you there. I think when I hear this particular person's set of experiences, I'm a cis woman and I feel deeply uncomfortable when I feel to mask. I think the question it brings up for me is, because I often think about dysphoria as, you know, the distress or the feeling that comes with the feeling of not being aligned with yourself, which of course could happen for anybody regardless of gender. But when I hear somebody say, I'm a cis woman and I feel deeply uncomfortable when I feel to mask, I also wonder, what is the name? Is there a name for the feeling that we have when we're embodying something that we don't feel allowed to embody? Which might be slightly different from what doesn't make us feel aligned. Like, could potentially the cis woman, as she feels mask, feel dysphoria because she doesn't feel allowed to inhabit that, or because there's not been room for her to inhabit it versus dysphoria. So I just wonder if maybe there's like a little bit of nuance there when the thing that causes dysphoria is something that we've been taught we're not allowed to inhabit. Is there a difference, or maybe there's, you know, maybe we don't have an answer for that. Does that make sense?
What that brings up for me is also this question around like, is there this feeling of, for lack of a better term, like fear of masculinity? Like maybe there is this feeling, or there could be a possibility to open up to being masked, but it's like, I don't know. I think that my misandry comes through sometimes when it thinks about like masculinity and like, I don't want to be a man. Like, men suck, you know? But I'm wondering if that's also a piece of it too. Like, what if we could decide what is masculine? Like, what if we could rewrite the scripts of what masculinity is? And would that offer this person and all of us like different expressions of that we get to choose feel good to us? Because there isn't one example or expression of masculinity, just as there isn't one example or expression of femininity. So I wonder if like, and it's totally okay for this person, they're just like, nope, not mask, don't have any interest, it's not my ministry. But like, if there is some curiosity about like, is the reason why I feel dysphoria around my maskness, does it relate to like, that's just not my ministry? Or it's like, I actually have some fear, or I've been harmed by masculinity. Right. And it feels like that isn't something that I can properly embody because it just feels unsafe in some capacity. I don't know. That's what came up for me as I was listening to you speak.
Yeah. No, I think harmed by or even punished for embracing it in the past could be part of that too. Okay, next question. Another big one. If gender is a construct, then why am I only attracted to one gender?
What's coming up for you all?
We see
I'm
you.
Like, break the seal.
I can share that. Like, I think that I'm like a big fan of like, yes, and all things can be true. Gender can be a construct and is a construct, and you can still lean a certain way within that. We still operate within it. Race being a construct and me being primarily attracted to Black folks, both things are true. And I can be curious about the construct of race and how it plays out, white supremacy, heteronormativity, and all of these things, and still be part of my life and part of like the language in which I was raised and how I was socialized. So I think that it can be a construct, but you can also live and operate within it to the extent that you feel comfortable and the permission giving to yourself to explore that. and explore what it means for you to have attraction and what it means for you to have romantic attraction and sexual attraction and platonic attraction and all of the ways in which gender probably shows up very variant in your life that in ways you're not aware of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I would add to that, there are many different ways to be attracted to somebody and that sexual attraction isn't the only qualifier of you being attracted to someone. Mm-hmm. I think about this a lot around like ace folks, and I myself identify as ace or an asexual person on the ace spectrum, and how I experience little to no sexual attraction, but I have like other spaces of attraction that lights me up and makes me feel really good about the people that I'm with. Not even just platonic, but I'm like, you know, there's aesthetic attraction. There's like emotional attraction. Like I feel a sense of like, oh, I love that person's emotional availability and the way that they're able to have this intelligence about their own feelings. And that is really attractive to me. There is like spiritual attraction, sensual attraction. Mm-hmm. Like I'm of the belief that there is no such thing as being 100% of anything. So whenever someone's like, I'm 100% straight, I'm like, because there's nothing straight in nature. There's nothing perfectly straight in nature. You can look at a tree and it's never going to be perfectly straight, even if it's just like 99% or 99.5%. There's still... There's still some variance. And so I wonder about someone who says that they're only attracted to a particular gender. Like, is that true when you think about just like the variance and the nuance and the spectrum that happens with attraction? Right. Because if we see attraction in this black or white, like I'm attracted to you, I'm not attracted to you sexually kind of way, then yes, I would buy that. Mm-hmm. But if we're expanding our definition and our own experience of attraction, you might find that there's a little bit more wiggle room. There's a small percentage that might find that attraction. It just may not look the ways that you're used to it looking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Agree with everything both of you said. I think too, when I think about the way that the construct of gender has been built, it's been built to mean a certain way that emotions look, right? This gender's set of emotions looks this way. It's meant, it was built to capture a certain kind of body, a certain kind of way of moving through the world, a certain kind of expression. That's what this fake construct has been built upon, right? All of those different things. So when we say we're attracted to one gender, are we trying to say, or is what we mean by that, I'm attracted to a particular way that people express emotions, a particular expression? Are we saying we're attracted to an amalgamation of so many different parts of people that we've come to know by this construct of gender? And so to both of your points, if we start to piece that apart, what are all of these things that have come to mean gender to us? Then Evian, to your point, you know, what room might there be to shift our language away from I'm attracted to one gender and to talk about it with more of a range?
Yeah, I think what you were saying, Evian, was like that stuck out for me too, was just like the variance within gender of if you are saying that you're primarily or only, to use this person's language, attracted to one gender, like, does that look really like uniform within each person? And I bet that there's a lot of difference in this person's experience of attraction, like you mentioned, of the different types of attraction that could be physical or not. And so being curious within that of what are the qualities, what is the embodiment, what do all of these things actually mean for you?
Mm-hmm. And what have you been given access to? Like, I think a lot about who I was 20 years ago. And if you had asked me if I was attracted to one gender, I would have said yes, because my experience was so limited. And I was only given this one option and was brought up thinking that there was only one option for myself to pick. Like, yeah, that would have been my answer. But the more that I began to unpack, like, what does it actually mean to be attracted to people? And what, how does my sexuality want to be expressed outside of the social norms and the religious teachings that I was given back in the day? And yeah, it's okay for folks to answer those questions and be like, no, I'm good, you know? But I know for me, it wasn't until I started asking myself those questions and really questioning the very small amount of options that I had that I realized, oh, I want the whole thing. Like, I want the whole buffet. I want to have access to that. Yes. And like, yeah, I just wonder also for folks who are like, I'm only attracted to one gender, is like, is that because you've been conditioned to be attracted in that way? And if you examine within yourself, like, yes, I was conditioned, and yes, it's still true, that's great. I just think that we should examine it and be curious about it.
Mm-hmm. One more thing about that, just that, that just sparked this idea in me, because I wonder if this person who asked this question identifies as straight or identifies as a lesbian or gay, because I do wonder if even once part of the menu opens, or maybe, you know, we now have a buffet, if even then that conditioning, not necessarily the conditioning to be attracted to the quote unquote opposite gender, like maybe we've lost that, but maybe the conditioning to still be attracted to one gender is different from that. And that conditioning is still there, even once we lose the comp het. Like, could we still be boxing ourselves in on the other side? And I think this is the type of conversation that I feel like I've been almost canceled for on Instagram before by people who are like, no, just let me not be attracted to all these other genders. So it's complicated. And I think it brings up trauma stuff for people, a bigger conversation than what we can have today, but super interesting.
All right. So our next question says, I'm a non-binary butch lesbian. I love when my wife sucks strap. Woo! I had shame about this until I stopped yucking my own yum, and life is better now. So this is less of a question and more of just like a statement. And I love it. And love the phrase, suck strap.
We celebrate this with you, whoever.
Yes. I'm doing jazz hands. Yes. Love that.
I think that like the process of like not yucking your own yum is like something that can definitely come up. And I think that that can be so liberating of being like, yeah, I like this. This thing is hot to me. And I get to celebrate that.
Yeah. Cause oftentimes the voice within us that is yucking our own yum is yucking this our yum from a place of like, well, that's not what I should like,
right?
Or that's not what I should do, or that's not radical, that's not feminist, or whatever have you. So like being able to just like let yourself want what you want and enjoy what you enjoy without pathologizing it, without shaming yourself. Yeah. I love that for you.
Right. And so much of yucking our own yum, whether it relates to something in regards to sex or a relationship or actually food or a job or whatever, is a strategy that we've developed probably very young to keep ourselves on a path that kept us safe, right? At least at a certain point, right? If I can convince myself this is yucky, then I won't veer off the path and I won't experience rejection or I won't be ostracized. But as we move into adulthood and that safety is for a lot of us, not for all of us, something that we can count on more, we don't need our caregivers as much, then I think, yeah, it becomes safe to wonder about that and we can let some of that go, which sounds like you did. I love this. How do I know if I'm non-binary or faking it?
I'm laughing because I'm like, who are you and why did you get into my brain? That's not here. I just feel for this person asking because I've been there many, many times in my life, in this day. Yeah, I don't have anything to add other than like I see you and I feel that.
I'll echo that too. I read this question. I was like, how do I answer this? I can't even answer this for myself. I think that society would like us to believe that we're faking it. So I think that's probably one of the reasons why we feel that way.
Yeah. Something that comes up for me when I think about my own non-binary imposter syndrome is like, it has been really difficult for me to try to answer the question of my gender with my mind. And when I think about how non-binariness feels in my body. Like when I think about the cues my body gives me and the way that my body softens when somebody uses a they pronoun for me, or the way that I look at myself in the mirror and I'm like, damn, I look hot today. Like I'm really trying to lean into the wisdom of my body around my gender expression and around my non-binariness. Because the moment that I get in my head about it, I'm like, I'm not doing this enough and I don't look like this enough. And it becomes this like puzzle that I'm trying to put together as opposed to a truth that I'm trying to live out and embody. And so I guess I would offer that reflection to this individual who's asking about this. How do you feel about your non-binariness in your body? Like, what are the things that have happened in your life, in your days, you know, around gender euphoria that, like, yeah, that give those moments of resonance, of softening, of like enthusiastic yes. I keep coming back to that, but like an enthusiastic yes. Like, how does your body tell you that you are non-binary?
When you said that, when you said that, maybe I don't have your exact wording right, but that you are having difficulty answering that question with your mind and like leaning into your body, like I like found myself just be like, literally just like kind of like holding myself there and just being like, wow, like all of the ways that I might not have this really cerebral cognitive approach to answering a question, to identifying an experience, but having a lot of wisdom here and like how to validate that. As so authentic and so like a bottom up experience of like what feels grounded.
And then maybe this is where the imposter syndrome for me comes from. It's like we have this very limited understanding of what a gender expression looks like. And I have even found myself being like, I'm not non-binary enough. And I'm applying the same standards of gender expression within the binary. Like I'm doing the exact same thing to myself that I, you know, that you would find within, you know, the gender binary. And so I like tuning into the body because I feel like that is where my gender lives. Like the moment I start thinking about it, I lose it. But if I can take a deep breath into my belly and like really feel in my own body, like I am non-binary. And even just saying that, like offering that to yourself, I am non-binary, and like seeing what happens in your body, like what resonates in your body, what sensations come up, and just notice and offering some care, some gentle touch to any part that felt, you know, activated, tense, or maybe got warm. And just remembering, like, I don't know, I really feel like gender is an embodied experience. And I think that there's nothing that anybody can do to take that away from us. Like, even if it doesn't make sense with our minds, like I really want to feel into the wisdom of the body and also trust that wisdom.
What you're talking about reminds me of like this concept of mirroring and how for cis people, most of their lives, they're getting their genders mirrored back to them, at least with some kind of accuracy, right? Like you are a woman, you are a man. But for trans folks, non-binary folks, that's so much harder to come by, maybe impossible to come by. And so I think, Evgen, what you're talking about, at least how I'm interpreting it, is that we can offer ourselves some of that mirroring within ourselves. Like our bodies are mirroring it back to us. Our bodies are validating it. We don't necessarily need somebody else to, because actually with the way that our nervous systems regulate itself around our gender, it tells us everything that we need to know.
And also just like a practical answer to this question that I come back to again and again when I have this question come up is like, no cis person is going around thinking about their gender this much. Like it is only non-binary people, trans people, gender non-conforming folks that are having this question of like, I feel like I'm faking it, you know? So like when I think about my cis friends, and I'm like, do I have any cis friends? But like, when I think about my cis friends, like they're not asking themselves these questions. They're not staying up at night thinking about whether or not they're doing it right. And so I think that that is just another indication. Like if you think that you are non-binary, you probably are. And that's rad.
One of the telltale signs is wondering if you actually are.
Yeah.
We're going to take a quick break to talk about an amazing new show, Come As You Are.
If you recognize that phrase, you're probably right. It's the amazing Emily Nagoski as your host. This is a book that actually was just my sex Bible for the first many years that I was exploring my sexuality, getting to know who I am. It's a book I reference so many times when I'm teaching clients about things like desire, arousal non-concordance, completely changed my life. And I imagine this podcast will too.
Educator and best-selling author Dr. Emily Nagoski answers questions about sex with the latest science on her new podcast, Come As You Are. Get a modern guide to sexual well-being backed by groundbreaking research about desire, anatomy, orgasm, and much more. In conversation with her producer, Emily debunks cultural myths and flips the script on everything you thought you knew about sex and sexuality.
Listen to Come As You Are wherever you get your podcasts and unlock your most pleasurable life in the bedroom and beyond.
We're going to take a quick break to talk about an amazing show, Bedside. And I know it's amazing because a couple of months ago, I was a guest and the conversation is seriously not to miss. Questions like, how do I have better orgasms, build amazing relationships, talking about what does good sex mean? What does that look like in practice?
Each week on Bedside, sex educator Tatiana delves into intimate interviews and explorations around modern day sex, dating, love, and wellness, with a little manifestation sprinkled in there too. Bedside chats with sexperts and wellness thought leaders about the many and unique approaches to sex and pleasure, all while keeping you curious, informed, and of course, having fun. You can expect topics like friend breakups, ghosting, tips from sex therapists, and explorations into the energetics around love, partnership, and sexuality. Tune into Bedside wherever podcasts are found, available on all streaming platforms. Bedside is your go-to resource for all things good sex. All right. Our next question says, I'm attracted to a non-binary person. What are some guidelines about what is appropriate and not appropriate to ask? I don't want to offend or harm them when asking about sexual stuff. So this kind of like sounds like support, how to support a non-binary partner or interest.
I would love to just normalize that, like, the questions really shouldn't be different depending on somebody's gender. Like, we should be asking everybody the same questions, because regardless of gender, it's helpful to know where people's pain points are, what they need, what they like to, how they like to talk about themselves. So I think if you want to know, like, when you start to veer into something that I think is harmful, it's when you start talking to a trans or non-binary person about sex or their body in a way that you wouldn't talk to a cis person about. And I think there's a lot we can learn from the gender expansive community and the language that they have, but I think it's applicable across the board, and it's questions that we should always be asking or thinking about.
I'm glad that you mentioned that, because like we're all human, you know, and we all have dignity and we all deserve to be respected. And those questions don't necessarily have to be different just because we're having a different gendered experience than you are. Okay, I'll speak personally for me, and I don't really know exactly what this person wants to ask their partner, what kind of sexual questions they want to ask, but I will say that I love it when my partner will ask me, or even my friends will ask me, like, hey, what pronouns do you like for me to use for you? Or like, I just used honey when I refer to you. Is that okay? I feel like those things offer me this feeling of like, oh, you care about me and you want to make sure that I am safe with you. And so I can apply that even with like sex and sexuality. Like, how do you want your body to be talked about? How would you like for me to refer to your chest or your breasts? Like, what are the words that would be good for you, or your genitals? Like, what is that? How is that for you? I don't know. I particularly love that questioning, because I love it when people are curious about me. And when they're curious, it can help to create safety for me. So maybe something to think about as well.
Yeah, I really like what both of you said around just like being curious about a person's experience and preference is something that I would hope that we practice more. And I think that it just gets kind of like washed away, and we do so much assuming. And I think then it sounds like this person does have a lot of care and wants to approach this tenderly. And that we're human beings and everybody is going to have a different preference. And there is not a monolith of a non-binary experience where it's like, as a non-binary person, we like this and this only. Everybody can shift in what their preferences are. Everybody can shift in what turns them on, what turns them off, like in their relationship with their body, their relationship with their sexuality. So I think the understanding that that can happen and just to be having more curious conversations around sex, intimacy, and care is a great practice to kind of like integrate into your life in general.
Yeah. I mean, I think the other thing that I would add to this is like, I hear in this question, like this fear of like not getting it right, you know, saying the wrong thing and how that can keep us from having these questions because we're, or having these kind of conversations because we're so worried that we're going to say the wrong thing. We're going to harm people. And that is a real, that's a real feeling. I don't want to bypass that. But I also just want to be in spaces where we give ourselves and each other grace to get it wrong sometimes, especially if the getting it wrong is not malicious. It's just like, I didn't know.
Yeah.
And yeah, I want for us to build a little resiliency around like, yeah, maybe your partner, maybe you said something to your partner and they did not like it or it wasn't the right word or whatever. And like that can be another example of creating more intimacy and trust as you work through that experience. I just see so many people like so afraid to speak and say the wrong thing that they say nothing. And I really want us to just like have these conversations, have each other give ourselves grace and leniency to an extent. And like, I'm obviously not talking about people who are being harmful and misgendering you and things like that on purpose. But like, what is it like for us to see each other in our humanity and to see each other as like, we are trying our best in this system, in this world that has conditioned us within this binary way of thinking and that we can co-create relationships where we can get it wrong sometimes. And it's not the end of the world. It's just another way for us to be intimate with each other.
I was just going to say something about like the permission giving to get something wrong and not to have to be perfect or have everything figured out and to ask things as kind of more innocuous questions. So to just be able to ask something because you're curious, not like, hey, I'm thinking and I was wondering and I have this huge ask of you, but to ask it in the same way that you would ask somebody what they want to eat for dinner so that it's more normalized. So like, I'm asking this about your gender identity, your sexual preferences, because I care about it in the same way that I care about this other thing. And the more that we can like integrate these conversations into our thinking and the way that we speak to each other, just is like, I think there's just a lot more space there. Like, I can get this wrong. I don't have to like have presented myself as an all-knowing type of being or something like that.
It's so easy to forget, at least for me, that I was that person six, seven years ago who didn't know how to use they, them pronouns for anybody, who didn't understand them, who like that I was that person. So it's not just like a random stranger we're talking about. We're even talking about younger versions of ourselves, most of us in the queer community. Yeah. So what might also be going on there, right? When we're so hard on people who are where we once were. It's just something else to think about.
These are great questions.
I know.
I love your community.
They're really so good.
Phenomenal.
Yeah.
Okay. How do you stay present during physical intimacy while experiencing gender-based body dysmorphia?
This is really, really difficult. Really painful experience.
One thing that comes up when I think about maybe clients I've had who have brought this in is sometimes when people ask this question, they're worried about fantasizing too much and maybe conceptualizing fantasy as the opposite of presence. Like, in order to stay present, I have to fantasize about myself in this body or with this genitalia or looking different in this way. And I'm not present. When in actuality, I think fantasizing is and can be a way of being present. And it's not the opposite of presence. And so I don't know this person's story, but one thing I could offer is if what one thing you're worried about is fantasizing too much, what if you actually gave yourself permission to conceptualize fantasizing as a form of presence? So imagining, you know, if part of the way you cope with dysphoria is
imagining or fantasizing in a way that relieves your dysphoria, like give yourself permission to conceptualize that as part of presence. That doesn't have to be the opposite of presence. That's just one thing that comes to mind.
I love that. Yeah, when I was hearing this question, I was thinking about that it's okay, like, to stop having sex if you're in that space, you know? I think so often we forget that we have that option to pause and take a moment when we need to, if things start to get too intense or if we start to feel disconnected. So yeah, I want to offer that to this person. Like, it's okay to take a break. You know, it's okay to pause and do something else and find another way to connect to your body, or to just like pivot to a different way of experiencing sex. And then I guess the other thing that I would add to that is, like, if you're not wanting to stop because you're like, no, I want to keep going. This feels good. But also these thoughts or these feelings are just really loud. The breath is always a really beautiful way to come back into the body. So taking some deep inhales through the nose into the belly and just like sighing it out. I've noticed that whenever I start to dissociate during sex or just become unpresent, breath is a really beautiful way to bring me back into my body, back into feeling my body. Because I know that, yeah, experiencing dysphoria, I know for me, I feel like I'm not in my body during those moments. So yeah, if this person really wants to stay in their body and stay in the sexual experience, like, try breathing. And breathing might be a way to anchor you back into feeling good.
Yeah, I have a few different thoughts that come up around, like, not being present in your body during sex. And first want to say that that's such a common experience. I've experienced that countless amount of times. Like, being present in your body is sometimes a lifelong work. And so if you dip in and out of it, that okay, you're not doing something wrong. And ways to center and ground yourself are, like you said, stopping. Maybe that's when you integrate some sort of safe word. I like to wiggle my toes and fingers, and also incorporate the different senses as well. Like smell being really good, which is great because I feel like accompanies breath, like just a deep inhale through the nose. And then you can also be like, okay, I can smell this person's breath or sweat or candle or whatever's happening, so that it disrupts kind of like that disconnect between the mind and body and allowing you to feel more present. And so I think it's the having like the resources and practices to get back into your body, and also the permission giving to not always feel in your body and not punish yourself for it, because it's challenging. And I think the more that you can identify, this happens particularly when I'm being touched here, particularly being when I'm in this sort of position, when my partner or partners say this sort of language, then you can start to track it a little bit more of like, yeah, I was fully with you until you said X, Y, Z thing. And then you can kind of reflect it, and it doesn't always have to be like right in that moment. It might feel inaccessible. You might have other points of your body that are feeling really pleasurable and stimulated, but maybe that you're like, I'm noticing that this kind of happens every time that we get into this position, or every time that we do this type of role play. So like, let's be curious about that the next time that we're engaging.
Of all of that, I feel like you covered it. I think letting go of any shoulds, right? Like, even the should that you should be naked during sex, you don't have to be. If seeing a particular part of your body brings awareness to that part of your body, and having on a piece of clothing, and maybe it's not just a piece of clothing, maybe it's one that's grounding piece of clothing that feels really euphoric for you to wear, or maybe it's not clothing, maybe you're naked, but you're wearing a bracelet that reminds you and grounds you. Or it's a playlist that's euphoric, right? It doesn't have to be an item. So could there be a grounding item, song, smell, taste, whatever it is, that can kind of pull you back in.
I love that.
Okay, last question.
Okay, so this person asks, why is it so hard for queerness to be taken seriously as a femme cis woman? Like I could speak to that.
Please. Yeah. Get in there.
I think like the compulsory heteronormativity really comes into play here. And like our kind of, I'm not a super big fan of the word addiction, but like addiction to the binary and mm-hmm. to knowing and conceptualizing of like, this makes sense because I can categorize it as this, and this makes sense. And I don't want any wiggle room. And so I think for like femme cis women, it's like, okay, well, but I need to understand you as being only attracted to men, only attracted to this type of man, only attracted to somebody who is also a cis person. So I think that it's the discomfort with ambiguity, the discomfort with not knowing, the discomfort with identity as a continuum rather than a binary. But it can feel really like isolating and alone, because I think that it's, you know, then people want to or assume that you share their like homophobic or transphobic views because of your presentation or your identity. And so I think then it's like then our responsibility to be like, nah, like I'm not with you on that. Like I can still exist in this identity. My identity as a queer person is still real and valid, and that like my journey is still here.
Hmm. Yeah, man. Homophobia is a killer drug.
For real. For real.
It really is. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that like we want queerness to look a certain way in order to be taken seriously. Like we want it to be clocked. We want it to be identifiable. I think that again, the discomfort of being like, wait, you? Wait, how? Like, wait, how do I integrate this into my knowledge to what can make sense for me when it actually has nothing to do with you? Yeah, that was just another thought.
I'm somebody that is obviously queer, often mistaken for a femme cis woman. And an experience I've often had are people using this phrase, like, what a waste. Like, it's such a waste that you're queer. And when you really think about what they're saying, it's basically saying, right, I know, deep breaths. But you're such a waste to men, right? What are you useful for? And so I think about one of the reasons why, you know, for femme cis women, why it can be so difficult is this like ego of the cis man that like their manness, their cis manness should be enough of an entry point for them to be able to have you and the right that they feel to you. And your queerness is a moment where they have to reconcile that they don't have that power over you, right? And of course, they don't have that power over a lot of straight women too, but that's a moment where they have to reconcile. And it's like they can't compute. And so the way that they relieve that dissonance is through phrases like, it's such a waste, or you can't really be queer, or don't you miss, you know, being with men, whatever. We've all had different versions of that. But yeah, I think it's also about ego and narcissism and misogyny. It's a hard question to end on because it's,
I know,
dark.
It's like, yeah, it's heavy.
Yeah, it's heavy. Yeah.
I actually have a question that I would love to like pose to the room.
Perfect.
To get the darkness out of our bodies, like shaking that out. What has given you all euphoria recently?
And are you speaking specifically about gender euphoria?
Yeah. Let's do gender euphoria.
Yeah.
I have one. I have a memory. My partner, Mal, was talking about, I think I was getting dressed to go out or something, and she made a comment along the lines of like, whatever you wear, whatever kind of like traditional gender expression you put on, it looks like it fits, which was just a really tangible way of saying something that I've always dreamed about feeling about myself, which is to be able to sort of inhabit these different looks and for it to just as read as natural. And hearing that was really euphoric for me.
Oh, that's beautiful.
It's really sweet.
I was doing some sort of like movement the other day. I was like trying to like lift some weights just because I've been having back problems and trying to strengthen my core. And I'm like, I think continually struggling through just like feelings about my body and trying to distance myself from my body. So trying to be present in my body as it shifted over time has been hard. But I think afterward, I was like, I was just like stretching and listening to really good music. And I just like really felt like a really strong woman. Mm. And I think that that felt good. Like I was like, I felt like tension, and then I felt like breathlessness, and I felt like accomplished, and I felt like good that I didn't do everything perfectly. And I just felt, yeah, well, I felt good.
Aw, really beautiful, Camille.
Mm. I love that. Thank you for sharing, y'all. Mm-hmm.
Do you have an answer?
Yeah, we want to hear your answer.
Yes, I do. This is something that I experience every 7 days because I shaved my head this year. It's the second time I've shaved my head.
And, it looks amazing. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Thank you. I'll never go back. And actually, this is bringing up something from a previous question that I also want to touch on. Like, you know, this idea that if you don't feel non-binary enough, like, do something that makes you look more non-binary.
Yeah.
And for me, a lot of my non-binary imposter syndrome came from, I didn't realize this until I shaved my head, like, oh, I do present very, very femme, especially when my hair was past my shoulders and it was big and it was curly. And I shave my head every 7 days because like I don't want it to get too long. And every single time, like every time I turn on the buzzers and like I can feel that vibration on my head and I can see myself transforming back into like this bald headed baddie, I'm just like, yeah, that's it. That is my gender. So I feel really lucky that I get to have something very sensual that I can practice, like an actual sensual ritual that gets me back into gender euphoria. Because every time I see myself, it's like the first time. I'm still like taken aback, like, oh my God, that's me.
Do you have a particular day of the week that this ritual comes with?
Yeah.
I try to do it on the weekends when I'm like, you know, after I've done all of my errands, grocery shopping, and I make it an event. Like I turn on some music and I make sure that the shower is just right. Sometimes I'll sauna afterward and then like take a nice hot bath. So it just, it's so nourishing for my body. And also there's so much tied, especially for Black women and Black femmes, there's so much tied to our hair. Yes. And being able to radically change this relationship with my hair as a Black person, it's just like that's that added layer of gender euphoria for me and like radical Blackness and womanism. It's just like it's all wrapped up in there. So yeah, highly recommend shave your head once in your life. It'll change your life.
Oh, amazing.
You heard it here.
Yes.
Thank you for that question.
What a wonderful question.
Thank you for your answers. It was really lovely to hear you all and your experiences.
Evian, do you have anything that, I mean, we read your bio, but do you have anything that you want to plug or any projects you're excited about that you want to share?
Yeah.
Thank you for asking. I always want to plug my podcast, Sensual Self. It's a really lovely breath of fresh air for those of us who want to slow down and tune into our bodies. And I really try to like infuse the show so that it invites you to slow down and to pause a little bit. So I highly recommend that for folks who are like, okay, we talked a lot about body disconnection today and like what are some practices and some tools that can get us back into union with ourselves. So Sensual Self is a really great resource that I love to plug. And we've had some excellent folks like talking about pleasure. We've had Adrienne Marie Brown. We've had Dana Knuckles, who's talked about decolonizing gender. It's one of my favorite episodes. I interviewed my mom back in the day about her sex life. So like there's some wonderful gems in there. So I want to plug that. And also I'd love to plug my book as well, Sensual Self. Same title as my podcast. It's just a beautiful journal that folks can work through to connect them back into their bodies with prompts and practices that guide you and hold you and nourish you and really allows you to experience like what does it look like for me to be a sensual being on my own terms. And yeah, you can find Sensual Self wherever you listen to podcasts, and you can also find it wherever you get books.
Amazing.
I will be running to the podcast. Yeah, and also
I can't wait.
Buying the book.
Quick subscribe.
Yeah, easy.
Yeah, I'll send you, I have copies. I'll send you both copies of my book.
Oh, so sweet of you.
That'd be incredible.
I really love that.
I'm so excited. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This was such a wonderful conversation. Really appreciate you.
Yeah, thank you all. It was really great to meet all of you.
Safe Word is hosted by Casey Tanner and Camille Lewis and is produced by coordinator E.T. Townsend. Our theme song is written and performed by Emma Jane and Toria Rainey. To support the show, please follow us on Spotify and take a moment right now to give us 5 stars. We also love rave reviews on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Every other week, we put out a question box on Instagram, giving you the opportunity to ask for advice on the topic at hand. To submit long-form questions in writing or in your own voice, go to the Safe Word Pod or Queer Sex Therapy Instagram page and click on our link tree in the bio to write out those long-form questions.
If anything today made you curious about seeking support, our practice, the Expansive Group, has a great team of therapists and mentors here to discuss challenges you might be facing. Go to theexpansivegroup.com, submit a contact form, and we'll get you connected.
For a behind-the-scenes look at Safe Word and podcast updates, find us on Instagram @SafeWordPod.
We'll be back in 2 weeks with a new episode of Safe Word.